The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
We're back for the second half of the show. Some fantastic guests during the early part. Let's share a few more headlines with you at the midpoint of the show. And former Razorback Peyton Hills discharged from a hospital weeks after rescuing his kids from drowning. Quite an ordeal, but a very brave gesture. We are taking your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Love to hear from you, so give us a ring, and let's check in with TG up next. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Paul. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you.
I got tuned in a little bit late, so I thought this was just an NFL show to start with. But anyway, I was driving up the highway. But yeah, I liked your comments on Tom Brady. Anybody that doesn't think he's the best QB to ever play, I don't know. They'd have to have their head in the sand. If anything, and every great player has to have great personnel around him, and Tom did. But he's also elevated a lot, and he probably elevated a lot of the coaching staff as well. But anyway, with that said, the other thing I wanted to ask is or actually just say and see what your thoughts are. I heard somebody talking about the Heisman Trophy. And do you remember when UT's Johnny Majors was in the running for the Heisman Trophy in the 1950s?
My knowledge of that is knowing Coach Majors as a student and talking to him about that. And he told me the story one day, and it was sometime, I think, 56. And he came in second.
I think you're right.
He came in second to Paul Hornung, I believe, played for Notre Dame, and they had a losing record. I think they won one game the whole year.
Yes, sir. Paul Hornung, who probably was a great athlete too, but it kind of goes back to UT, kind of the Vols, kind of, and I'm a Vol fan, but anyway, they've kind of been snubbed their time or two, but yes, he finished. He was the favorite that year, supposedly. I wasn't born yet. But he was the favorite, and then he ended up finishing second to Paul Hornung. And then, of course, you remember Peyton Manning.
Sure.
Was clear-cut favorite, and he ended up finishing second, albeit to a great player. And another player that went on to win or to go on to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, TG, I'll tell you a story. I met Charles Woodson a number of years ago in New York. We were both appearing with countless others at some event for ESPN, and he was staring at me because I had been all over that for 15 years, and he looked at me and said, "You got something to say to me?" I said, "Yeah, I sure do." I said, "You shouldn't have won the Heisman Trophy." He just broke out laughing.
That's funny, I think it's just he's a great guy, a great person, and he's a great analyst on the shows that he's on.
Right.
But it just UT's just got a bad track record in that, and then lo and behold, this year, Hendon Hooker, which I understand he's not going to win it because he didn't complete the season, but I at least thought the guy should have deserved a trip to New York City, but he didn't even get that.
I mean, the thing with Peyton and documentaries have been done. I mean, that was by far the biggest robbery, and it showed I always blame ESPN for that,
a lot of people have.
And by the way, ESPN influenced a couple of outcomes of Heisman, including when Robert Griffith won it. There were two other players, including an Alabama running back, who were in contention. And it does matter. The media plays a role in all this. We act like it doesn't, those of us in the media, but we do.
Yeah. And I'd heard you mention before that you had a vote in that. And I thought that's interesting because I'd asked you a question last week how some of these final rankings of the year work, and you explained it to me, But anyway, I mean, and I don't think they all care about it. Peyton Manning was the number one pick, went on to have a great career, and so did Charles Woodson.
But I will tell you this, TG, having met a number of Heisman winners, and you're right. I mean, Peyton Manning, has literally won everything imaginable. But there's something, I don't know if there's a correlation in any other field, but I guess maybe the only one I would use is winning the Masters. There's something about going back every year and putting on the green jacket. And I don't care what Peyton Manning has done or anybody has done. It's still in the first line of your biography. Peyton Manning, comma, who won the Heisman Trophy in college and then later won 8 MVP awards and ending his career on a Super Bowl. And it's something really special. So, you can get – he may have gotten over it, but his father never has. I can almost guarantee you that. Let's check out Jonathan up next. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Paul. How you doing? Love your show. First-time caller. I just want to see your aspects on the job Nate Oates has done for the Alabama basketball program. They've always been a powerhouse football program. We all know that. But
I'll tell you what he's done. He's got the best basketball team in the country. They should be number one today. They're not. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. And I think he's handled the last week with great poise. It's an extremely difficult thing to have what has happened to his program. And I say that fully understanding the consequences elsewhere are far more severe. But we're speaking of him. He's handled that part of it very well. And you know, his team has also handled it very well by going out and having two convincing victories. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Kathy is in Georgia. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Paul. I'm just want to make a comment on LT from South Carolina talking about our players and the ladies that got in the accident.
Yes.
As a mother who lost her son in June the last year, I'm happy that he was doing what he wanted to do. I'm glad he went to a strip joint. I'm glad that he was with his friends, because you know what? God is a gracious God, and we all sin and come short. So if he did not do what others think he should have done, he was doing what he wanted to do before he died. And I'm so happy he did. And these parents are still grieving. So people, sort of be kind. All these ambulance chasers, all these writers and reporters and all, and lawyers, y'all be kin and kind to these people. And for the person for Rara that got arrested the other night, you need to learn all the circumstances. And I'll get off, and you have a good afternoon.
Ken is up next. Hello, Ken. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Listen, I wanted to ask you a couple things. Well, first of all, you know, when Top Mile was on, Paul, I wanted to kind of go down the rope with you on this.
Okay.
You know, Mac Jones, boy, he was quarterback at Alabama. Where was he at, Paul?
He was on the bench.
That's correct. Tua Tagovailoa, where was he at, Mr. Paul?
He came off the bench.
That's what I want to tell these people. You know, Top Mile's a great analyst. I like him.
Okay.
But I'm here to tell you, I believe with these two boys coming out of Montgomery, Alabama, this James Smith and this other kid.
Oh, yeah, the teammates of Carver, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Nick Saban's got so many great players coming in that I think if a small portion of them break out and make a difference, that will be a big deal. The problem he does have, though, and I think this is what Topmeyer was trying to say, everyone has established quarterbacks. Now, listen, I'm sure the one person that doesn't want to hear all this love is Brian Kelly. Suddenly, without really, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't do anything. They did get to Atlanta. They beat Alabama. But the expectations now are no longer small in Baton Rouge, you know, because Topmeyer's not the only one. I mean, we had – who was here the other day touting LSU. I mean, I would stay with Nick Saban right now on that side of it, and I think the media will as well. But there is a conversation, at least, and that's to Brian Kelly's credit. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back on the show here on a Monday afternoon. Let's check in with Tony next. Hello, Tony. Tony, you there?
Yeah, you talking to Tony?
I am talking to you, yes.
Yes, I was just on the phone, and that guy Bubba from Alabama, I don't have a clue what he was talking about, you know.
Yeah, Tony, I'm glad you said that, because I thought I was the only person that didn't understand it.
No, I didn't understand that because I'm a Georgia Bulldog fan, but I'm from Alabama, so I don't know what he was talking about.
Well, first
of
all, to understand, Bubba, you have to speak Alabamaese, and I do.
Okay, well, but you know, it didn't really matter. I like what you said about the tragedy, too, because it doesn't matter where those people were coming from or going.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm surprised we haven't talked about this more tonight. And I'm not here to jump on a news organization, because I've been on that side of it, and they have their reasons why they told the story they did. But I think at this point in time, I don't know if it's really germane to the issue. It may be later on, and maybe they know something we don't. But it just I saw a headline. The headline was like, because somebody went to this strip club, he ended up in this accident, and I don't think you can make that claim.
No, you can't, because me and my wife were going down to home from Georgia. I was living in Georgia, and we had a real terrible wreck, you know, and this lady was turning in front of us, and she couldn't see for the sun, and it almost killed my wife. So you can go to the grocery store, so that's not relevant.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right about that, and let me try to give a little more context to this, because it's a tragedy, but let me read what was written by Tom Jones today of the Poynter Institute. And he wrote, investigating what happened that night is certainly a story worth pursuing, but it doesn't mean a story must be written. As far as we know so far, the four hanging out together, no matter where it was not illegal and doesn't necessarily suggest it was a reason for the accident. And I think that's accurate as of this moment. We still don't have all the facts. The editor of the AJC explained it, and I'll get his explanation out in a minute, but it still doesn't satisfy. You can't help but connect the dots here when you're reading a story, and that's really what we're talking about. People don't sit down like they did 30 years ago and read every line and every nuance. They see a headline, and there's a certain connotation there. Let's check in with Eric next in Alabama. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
We are doing really well. Thank you.
Good. I just want to tell you I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
Every day and listen to your radio.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Hey, I got a question on who do you think is going to become the defense coordinator at Bama? I mean, who do you think is going to be good out there?
Yeah, that is a question that I don't have a good answer to. I know that the inside money seems to be on Jeremy Pruitt, but as Blake Topmeyer said here a couple hours ago, that seems like a very big hill to overcome. Now, can Nick Saban do it? Sure. The most important thing is he may be precluded from recruiting, but somehow at Alabama you can probably get around that.
Yes, sir. And do you think Bill O'Brien's going to leave?
Yes, 100%.
100%. Okay. Well, I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yeah, O'Brien's interviewed with several NFL jobs, and it would be, at this point, a major upset if he sticks around. Let's check out Mikey in South Carolina. Hello, Mikey.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Really well. Thank you.
Yeah, it's disturbing, like you said. I just feel like nowadays the media just wants to have a story, and it's all about making the money and making heads turn and whether or not it's, you know, for them to report that. You know, so what? Nowadays, we have bigger fish to fry in this country. You know, we're exposing kids to drag shows and tell them it's okay to transition at six, but yet some grown people can't go to a strip joint. You know, maybe they had a nice buffet there that night. You don't know. Hell, I've been to a buffet in a strip joint. It's not that bad, Paul. But I'm also, you know, in other words, they want to get that story, want to be the first one to, you know, and regardless of the consequences. And that's a really big problem in our liberal news media these days. I had a question for you, Paul. What's the odds on Ra-Ra Thomas ever seeing the field of Georgia? I've got it about -280 right now. What do you think?
Yeah, and I mean, the allegations are incredibly serious, and I'm not going to go woke on you here and tell you that everyone is presumed innocent. I think we know what the Constitution states. But if there's a morsel of truth to any of that, I would side with your odds. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in next with Ronnie in Ohio. Hello, Ronnie.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
My question to you is, you know, with Kirby Smart doing what he's done back-to-back and Nick Saban, Tennessee coming along. Oh, by the way, I have to throw this in there. I'm a Notre Dame fan, and the Ohio State Buckeye fans are the biggest crybabies in the world. How do you see the SEC revolving with all this, you know, transferring around, my friend? And I'll get off here and let you answer my question.
Yeah, I think, Ronnie, it's becoming more difficult than ever to predict anyone beyond the top teams. And that's why I think you're going to see Alabama and Georgia, the picks. You'll see LSU right behind Alabama, and you'll see Tennessee right behind Georgia. But who will be the breakthrough? Last year we thought maybe it was Kentucky, maybe it was Arkansas. We were all wrong. It turned out to be South Carolina. We'll take a break. An interesting story brewing, as always, involving the NCAA and its future.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And this was a headline earlier today in Sportico. Federal college sports law may create many problems as it solves. Michael McCann, nobody does a better job than putting all this together than him. Michael, thank you for the time. It's always appreciative. You know, we keep hearing every administrator get the federal government involved, but you have some cautionary advice. You know, what are they getting into if that happens, assuming it ever does?
Yeah, Paul, that's, of course, a big assumption, right? Given that Congress is divided, we don't know how legislation would actually progress in this Congress. But if it did, there are all sorts of potential landmines ahead. For instance, take name, image, and likeness, right? That's sort of the easy one. Have a federal law on NIL that would create the same set of rules across the country. A lot of people think that's a good idea, and me included. I think there's merit to that. The downside to that, Paul, is that states have already been doing their thing now for a couple of years. And then secondly, there's something called the right of publicity that we all have as Americans. It's a state right. It varies by state. If you're in California, you're in Tennessee, if you're in New Hampshire, it's all different. How would a federal NIL statute intersect with states' law? That could create some litigation ahead. And then there's the issue of, what about an antitrust exemption? The NCAA wants an antitrust exemption. That would lead you to say, well, why do they get one when courts have consistently held against them, Alston, O'Bannon, and other litigation? Why should they have an exemption? And what would it cover? And could it become antiquated? You know, Pro Leagues got an antitrust exemption for sports broadcasting back in 1961. It's still in court. It's now the source of litigation out in California. In other words, the NCAA can seek clarity on the law, but in doing so, they could confuse things.
Let's try. I'm trying to understand. I know a lot of people watching and listening are as well. Why does the NCAA keep bringing this up? Why do they keep leaning in on Congress, considering it's their organization, and we all know they could have done something about it, but they didn't?
Yeah, I think one reason, Paul, is that they see the writing on the wall. The writing on the wall is they lost O'Bannon. They lost Alston. We saw Justice Kavanaugh's blistering concurring opinion against the NCAA. Now there's litigation out in Philadelphia regarding having college athletes be declared employees under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Out in California, the National Labor Relations Board is looking at them as employees under the National Labor Relations Act. So the writing on the wall, Paul, is things are moving out of the NCAA's control and towards a world where college athletes, at least some, will be recognized as employees and able to negotiate contracts or even unionize. So the NCAA is figuring, let's go to Congress to stop this. It's not a bad idea, but I think it's too late. And I think it's also one that really neither party, I don't think Republicans or Democrats, they don't agree on a lot, but on this, I don't think they're gonna side with the NCAA.
So assuming the obvious, that it doesn't get to Congress or it doesn't work its way through to a suitable fashion, what happens next?
Well, I think we'll see the NCAA in a position where they're going to run out of time. And the running out of time is some college athletes will be recognized as employees. So what will that mean? That will mean colleges are going to have to decide, do they want to pay their athletes? And at some schools, I think the Southeastern Conference, the decision may be yes. At other schools, the decision may be no. Now, the NCAA, I think, should try to preempt that. They should reach out. They should reach out to the actual players and say, look, we get it. The system that we've had for a long time is outdated. It's crumbling under legal scrutiny. It literally doesn't meet the contours of the law. Let's come up with something better. Let's come up with a system where maybe some college players are paid and others aren't. There's Title IX, which is an important federal law for gender equity, but there's ways of paying athletes in compliance with Title IX. If I were the NCAA, I would get ahead of it. If they keep trying to postpone things, and that's really just, it's like the prevent defense, right? Eventually you give up points.
So Michael, I realize everything right now, we're just, you know, spitballing here. You are, I'm just asking questions, but Where would we most likely see players being paid? Is there some part of the country? I know you mentioned the SEC where the law would necessitate that sooner, or is it universal?
Yeah. So the case out in Pennsylvania, which is maybe isn't, you know, the, of course there's Penn State, but there's other, it's not necessarily the biggest part of the country for college sports. There's a case there, Johnson versus NCAA, which is now at the federal appeals level. That case could lead to college athletes being FLSA employees. All that means is that they would be like their work study students. And that case is about this, Paul. Why is it that college students who are work study students, some of whom are on scholarship, why are they paid to work at games where their classmates are playing and they're not paid? It's kind of a commonsensical argument that can be difficult for courts to reject. So that's where it could come up. And the other other place would be out in California, which of course is very progressive, which I think is very labor friendly. And we know that the National Labor Relations Board, at least one regional director, believes that college athletes out there at USC could be employees. That's going to take a while to play out. I don't think that's going to be as fast, but we're talking 2-3 years, Paul. This isn't 2030. This is soon.
I realize you're a lawyer and you study the law and the nuances, and you know, everyone keeps saying, well, the NCAA has a new president, Charlie Baker. He understands politics because he got elected twice governor of Massachusetts. Good for him. Does that matter at all, that somebody in there is less rigid, perhaps, than Mark Emmert?
Yeah, I think Governor Baker was a good hire. He is a Republican in a very Democratic state. He was able to strike deals. He's pragmatic. He's not very ideological. I think in the position of NCAA president, rather than trying to defend years of this institution that has been so heavily attacked by both Republicans and Democrats, it's not as if there's like a support group for the NCAA's system of amateurism. Both parties really don't like it. So I think Governor Baker, soon to be NCAA President Baker, is the right kind of person for the job. To me, the question is going to be, what about his constituency? He represents these colleges and conferences whose viewpoints have been molded, that may be etched in stone. So he's going to have to convince folks that have longstanding viewpoints they need to change. And the challenge is going to be if he can pull it off.
Amazing stuff. I'm always confused when I see these headlines. And after talking to you, Michael, I don't know if I could pass one of your tests, but I at least I could fake my way through it. Hey, thanks so much for coming on. It's always great to have you.
You got it. Thanks, Paul. You'd get an A.
Thank you. I need one. Maybe I can get my GPA up with the semester coming to an end. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So an interesting story out there a week after the tragedy in Georgia. I saw this headline, then I was looking at something else today, and I happened to catch a headline in the New York Post with a picture. I want to read you the headline. It's one of the most circulated newspapers in the country. Devin Willock, Georgia players at strip club minutes before fatal crash. And I'm like going, huh? Like, and what's in your mind when you see a headline like that? There's a connection, right? So I started doing some more reading, and then I read this note from the AJC, that's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, from the managing editor, Leroy Chapman Jr. And I'll try to speed through this, but I'm just trying to give a little context. They had the article that the New York Post took its article from. Was it yesterday or today? Okay, it may have been sometime between yesterday and today, about the incident. And the managing editor under that says, we answer the questions why we're writing this story. That was in the January 22nd, which was yesterday. And Mr. Chapman said, we're pursuing the facts. And, you know, and here's what we know, and stated the obvious. We are asking accountability questions. LaCroix was driving a rental car. The university rents such vehicles to drive recruits on campus visits. Police say speed contributed to the accident. Why the four occupants of the SUV wound up together that night is important to understand. Those facts will determine who is ultimately accountable. How we got this story, talking about this strip club story. In seeking to shed light on what happened prior to the accident, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution interviewed people who encountered some of the four involved in the accident that night. The AJC also obtained public records and street camera surveillance video and found social media posts that allow us to construct a timeline. The AJC will stick with the story. We are steadfastly committed to providing clarity. We will continue seeking information from UGA administrators and athletic department leaders. We are also following the law enforcement investigations. That was written by Leroy Chapman Jr. He is in charge of the reporting teams that oversee Metro Atlanta's daily news coverage. A lot of criticism of this story. Why? Why did they do that? Do we know anything right now that directly connects the visit to the strip club to the fatal accident? It's a conversation that we have delved into briefly tonight, but intend to talk about it a little more as the week goes on. Shannon is up next in Georgia. Hello, Shannon.
Paul, you remember that comedian Jerry Clower from Yazoo City, Mississippi?
Oh, yes. Knew Jerry well.
So Jerry used to have this act that he would say to young folks, if you have to ever ask yourself, should I do this? The answer is you shouldn't. Does that make sense? Like,
it makes
should
perfect.
I really do this?
It makes perfect sense.
So, Paul, if you're a newspaper publication and you ever have to publish an article that says, this is why we're pursuing the story.
The answer is no. The moment you do that, you show weakness, you show that you're not sure, you show that you've heard from countless people already, and it makes you look small.
Paul, you know, as soon as I saw the headline that they had left a strip club in Athens, I knew the purpose of the publication was just for sensationalism and to garner clicks and reads. Because, and I don't want to get into debating what is and isn't a strip club with anybody, Paul, but here's the reality. The establishment that they were visiting in Athens is a topless establishment, okay? It's not a full-fledged VIP room strip club environment, right? Secondly, you have to be 18 to get in there, 21 to drink. Paul, if they had left an Applebee's minutes before the accident where alcohol is served as an Applebee's, would that have been published in the newspaper?
No,
it wouldn't have, Paul. It's the fact that they used the terminology that they left this strip club like it's some kind of heinous, deplorable act. And to me, Paul, it's doing nothing more than really just spitting on the graves of those two young people. You know, regardless, Paul, of what the toxicology report says, okay, I know this is going to come to a big shock to you, Paul. College students consume alcohol. College students imbibe and have a good time. And if you're in a college town that's got a topless establishment there, Paul, chances are you've probably visited it.
Yeah.
I mean, am I too far off the mark, Shannon,
I feel like you know me well enough that I do not like criticizing anyone in the media because I've always fought for the right to know. But I think in this case, that did not have to be published. If this comes out later on and you make an argument that something happened, you know, that maybe the drink served there, but they aren't making that argument. And quite frankly, by calling it, by Mr. Chapman calling attention to it, he's really made it into a big journalism story. And I know you, the journalists love to show up. It's like round up the usual suspects, and they're going to defend the right to do whatever. I don't think many journalists are defending the AJC on this. Do you?
No, I don't think there are. There's been I've read a lot of backlash on social media from wide and far that have basically been very critical of the AJC and those involved with the AJC who have been guys.
And by the way, the AJC plays a big role in the dissemination. Not only do they have the main publication in Atlanta. I don't know if the newspaper even comes out anymore. But they also own, do they not, Dognet or Dog something?
Dog Nation.
Dog Nation.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they do.
Isn't that where Griffith works? Yeah. Griffin works?
That's right. Yeah, and I've talked to several friends of mine, Paul, who had subscriptions to their message boards and things of that nature who have already canceled, and several more who say they're going to. I don't think this is going to be in any way positive.
By the way, I'm not blaming Mike Griffin. I just say he happens to work for a publication, an entity that's owned by the AJC.
Paul, I just think it's just another reason that I have a hard time trusting large-scale media because there was no reason to put in there they left a strip club. Now you've got the New York Post reporting. You've got people that don't know anything about the Georgia program or any of the details. And all they think is these guys have left some big
no,
high
Shannon,
roller
when you, if
strip club
and
in the
I've
VIP
said this,
room.
If you look at that headline that I mentioned at the top of this, you think that this? I mean, you think this is the reason why it happened? They were at a strip club.
Yeah,
I know that makes no sense at all, but that's
and
how important
guy,
headlines are.
And to the mental midget, I mean, the mental midget that called in earlier wanting to know if Kirby Smart would lose his job over this. Yeah. Paul, how would Kirby Smart in any way? Is he covering this up? Is he running front on the media saying don't report? I mean, come on, people. Use a little common sense. I mean, and Paul, speaking of that, I was listening to your show on Friday, and I heard this guy from Pell City, AJ, talking about does Georgia have a dynasty? And I heard him use the phrase intellectually speaking in terms of defining a dynasty. Paul, can we educate some of the callers about not using phrases and terminology they're not equipped to use? Like, intellectually speaking, I'm not sure he's qualified to be throwing that phrase around, Paul.
Thank you very, very much. John is up next in Florida. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Very well.
Hey, I just want to piggyback on what Shannon said, and Shannon's right, man. The AJC has lost credibility for a long, long time, and even to the level of Chip Towers. I mean, even Chip contacting the young man's dad after he had passed, asking him if he was going to sue the University of Georgia. It's just things like that. Like, they're just picking and trying to find things.
Now, by the way, I'm trying to check the story now. The original article was written by someone named Dylan Jackson and Alan Judd. I don't know that, but so
yeah.
Chip did not write the original, but yeah, I've seen Chip posting about it though.
Yeah, but in order to read Chip's article, you got to be willing to pay for it because there's like a little paywall.
Right, yeah.
Which a lot of people are doing these paywalls on, but just.
And by the way, for the record, John, I hate paywalls on media sites. Yep. I think they're outrageous.
Yep, you and me both. But like I said, I think Shannon. He did a very good job on what he said. Just the AJC has lost so much credibility, and it's almost like it's this thing to try to black out Georgia. With everything that happened, especially with these young people that lost their lives and their parents and all this, I mean, if going to a strip club is now going to be a contributing factor to what happened and so forth and so on, and trying to make something out of something, I mean, we're starting to get ridiculous with some of this.
Yeah, in the article you were referring to, I just saw that Mr. Willick, Devin Willick's father, said he has no plans to sue Georgia. But again, I don't know where to go. I mean, this is a really tough story to talk about, but now everybody is writing and publishing and asking questions. We feel probably a little more emboldened to at least get to the bottom of it. But I struggle with this because I don't know all the circumstances over there, but I think you have to use good judgment. That's what journalism is. It's trying to report the news. It's holding people accountable. It's looking under every rock imaginable, but also using judgment. I mean, I've cut things out at the last moment of a story that someone finally said, hey, it doesn't have to be in. It's not germane to your point. Maybe something that reflects negatively on the individual that has nothing to do with the subject matter. But we live in a completely different world because there's almost no checks and balances on the media any longer. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.